You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It's 7 o'clock here on a Wednesday. Mike McNamara with you. Good morning to you. Joining us from the East Coast of the United States of America is you'll meet Phil Smith again tomorrow. But this is one of Phil Smith's Marines. I didn't know that. And Chris Woodbridge joins us. Woody, I didn't know that Smitty was your SPC.
He certainly was. He certainly was. Yeah. Seems like about a million years ago.
Well, he told me what a shitbird you were. So
yeah, I know. Exactly. But, you know, he could have fixed that, but he didn't.
So your lack of performance is on him?
Directly indicative. Directly indicative on a lack of leadership and oversight.
Nice. I love that. Hey, first of all, Phil Smith, you've heard him on the program before, but he's a great guy and a prior enlisted Marine. What was Phil like as an SPC?
Oh my God, rock hard. Great example. He was at the time a fairly junior captain, but for us at the time, already had combat experience. Grenada, Beirut. He was prior enlisted, had been a staff NCO, reconnaissance Marine. Tremendous example, for all of us, young lieutenants, infantrymen in training, which was the entire platoon, regardless of what MOS you might have gotten, and, to include the infantry wannabes, and, he was exceptional, and, I'm glad to say that, I've known Phil for a long time. We've crossed paths many times throughout our careers, and most recently just a few years ago when he was running the Small Wars Center in McCitic. I was actually part of the headquarters of that organization at the time.
So you got a second chance to square your way.
As much as that can ever be done.
I love that. No, I love that. I love what a small world it is. I remember seeing one of the most interesting promotion ceremonies I've ever seen was when Colonel Joe Dunford was promoted to Brigadier General in the rotunda of the Division CP in Ramadi in 2004. I could not believe the number of people that came from all over the province to be at this thing. So, he's gonna put his star on and I'm a staff sec, so I work like 3 feet from him every day. And so I walk out there to make sure, the sound system's there and everything's where it needs to be. And I look and there's all these people there already. And I'm like, don't you guys have something to do? There's a war going on. And they're laughing like, yeah, we're not missing this one, though. And, it was like Craig Tucker rolls in from the western part of the province. You have guys coming from Baghdad to be there. And then and General Sattler, he came from the map to do the promotion. And Sattler was, he stands up, he begins his remarks. And he was an SPC. In Lieutenant Dunford's company, right?
Wow.
Exactly. And it was jam-packed like sardines in there. And it was really cool to hear Colonel Dunford at the time talk about his, the way he was raised. It's kind of a melancholy that, his parents couldn't be there to see him put on a star. And yet it was... There was no more fitting place to be promoted than in combat with the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines of the Blue Diamond, and how honored he was to do it. It was just one of the coolest, but it also just showed what a small place the Marine Corps is and what a cool thing that is for all of us as we continue to cross paths with each other and kind of kind of get to know each other in this way. So one of the things I think that has always been very, very cool about the Marine Corps, which is its size, especially among the officer corps, which is very small. So very cool.
No, you're right on. It really very much is a family, and especially in that that small officer corps. For good or bad, right. Everybody knows everybody. Your reputation precedes you, and who you know, and who you worked for, who mentored you, developed you as a young officer. That all precedes you as well, and it's a great, truly a great environment. It's unique. There are parts of the other services, units, and small communities that are like that, but it's one of the things that makes the Marine Corps unique, and I think as strong as we are.
Right, unique as a corporation too, and as you said, there's in other branches you see pockets of this. But the Marine Corps as a corporation, I think, embraces it and is that way. Let's talk about the May edition of the Gazette. First of all, is there a theme?
Well, May is the annual aviation issue. So the theme, bulk of the content in our ideas and issues sections are really covering the entire apron, if you will, of type, model, and series of aircraft. Current and developing or emerging capabilities, really kind of just across the entire spectrum, not just the aircraft communities themselves, but also air intelligence, the command and control side, MAX side of aviation. So it's an annual feature or an annual issue that we do. In May, this year is probably one of the more comprehensive versions of that we've done. And really, Headquarters Aviation and General Davis were crucial in driving that this year. General Davis, took a personal hand in this. Very frank and insightful article leads off the issue from DC Aviation, really taking the readiness issue head on, and then the other articles in that series talk to legacy capabilities such as the 53, emergent capabilities, tilt rotor and fixed wing, of course unmanned systems. And then some real insight into the challenges facing the aviation community now, particularly with regards to pilot retention and production of aviators. So really it's a manpower, an aviation manpower flavor to those articles.
Okay. And DCA, General Davis, He writes the lead article in this edition?
That's correct. Title is The Art of Readiness.
The Art of Readiness. Again, with much anticipation, because there is no hotter topic in the Marine Corps. Well, there may be online behavior might be hotter, but I don't know if there's a more. I mean, and I think the events in Korea highlight the Marine Corps' inability to answer the bell relative to readiness. I mean, if something happened there and there was shooting, what, we get between 25% and 30% of our F-18s, are mission capable, which is not good for the nation. And so interesting stuff. Let's talk about a few of the give me some highlights. Give me an article to take a look at.
So from that series of articles on the aviation theme, I'd highlight article titled "Legacy Lift" by the staff up at the aviation hallway. This is focused obviously on our heavy lift capability and the CH-53, and one of the key points is the fact of the matter is heavy lift is a strategic asset.
Right.
And as you look into the future, that heavy lift helicopter, our Marine Corps CH-53, really becomes a national asset. And our ability to upgrade and sustain that platform, the 53 reset program, and then upgrades to the airframe, is genuinely a national capability. The other services, the Army does have a heavy lift helicopter, the MH-47 Echo Chinook is a heavy lift.
MH?
CH and MH. MH okay. Is the special operations variant.
Okay, got it.
But the CH and MH-47s, the Chinooks, are a heavy lift capability, but they are not as capable as the 53. And also, they're not being reset and sustained the same way that the Marine Corps is sustaining the 53 into the future as part of our inventory. So in a joint force, that becomes part of the joint force commander's inventory of capabilities. This is something that not just the MAGTF, but that the Marine Corps as a service brings to that joint fight. And so that plan for reset and sustaining the 53 is described in detail in that article.
Got it. All right. Give me another one.
Let's see. So you've got two, and these are not point counterpoint articles. They're not arguing with each other. But you've got an article from the Aviation Hallway on fixing aviator production, which is a training production pipeline focused article. Then you've also got an article by two majors, Major Eric Schur and Major Jack Ramphon, both of whom are at Manpower Reserve Affairs, taking the other side, not in an opposition, but in the other part of that team, meaning the Manpower assignments and production team at MNRA. They've written an article, Proposed Solutions to Marine Corps Aviation's Fixed Wing Pilot Shortage. So taking those two articles in tandem gives the reader a very comprehensive view of the problem and some recommended solutions from guys that are not commenting on this from the sidelines, but from officers that are involved in developing and implementing those solutions, both at the Aviation Hallway up in the Pentagon and down here at Quantico at the Marsh Center on the Manpower Reserve Affairs side. So a good comprehensive view of that issue.
All right. My guest this morning is the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette, and he's the publisher of of Leatherneck Magazine. Christopher Woodbridge, he was a product of Captain Phil Smith's platoon at the basic school in 1989. Yes?
88.
Damn it. Okay. All right. 1988. And he's gracious enough to join us this morning. Can we pause right now? And I want to ask you about, you wrote a little bit of a commentary on the whole Marines United. Can you share with us the thought you wanted to or thoughts that you wanted to articulate in that?
Absolutely. The best news in all of this is we've had here at the Gazette we've had a steady flow of essays from Lieutenant Colonel down to corporal level authors. From around the Marine Corps, both male and female, writing in to offer their thoughts on the issue, the Marines United issue being the unlawful sharing of salacious images by Marines and veteran Marines of other Marines and veteran Marines and service members and veteran service members. The overall drumbeat, everyone has a slightly different take on the issue. But the overall drumbeat is not in any way trying to defend or explain away the behavior. Every one of these authors at of different levels, officers and enlisted, are taking the issue head on. And I think, properly, they recognize that, and you alluded to this earlier, Mac, and the issues with aviation readiness are probably the most significant combat readiness, issue for the Marine Corps right now. So in terms of what Marines and MAGTAFs do, executing our mission as part of the joint force, the aviation readiness, concerns right now are very high.
Right.
But the other issue, this online, what's being termed an online behavior issue, that's in a lot of ways an existential threat. And not so much what happened, but what's happening now in the aftermath and the reaction. And then a third domino, how our reaction is being perceived and either accepted or not by our elected and appointed leaders, and frankly by the American people at large. So I think what I wanted to try to get across is there's an awful lot of Marines out there. I would submit the majority of Marines out there get it, and I think ultimately the lasting solution lies with them, and lies with those Marines who have the moral courage, just to tell their brothers and sisters that's not all right. What you're doing is not okay. Taking those pictures and posting them out on Instagram or Facebook is not okay. Taking pictures from someone else's social media presence and sharing them, without their permission is not okay. And so I think ultimately that front line is where, the real solution is going to be found. However, that is not the only answer, that we as a service, that our leadership can provide. So yes, there is going to be the ongoing investigation. There is going to be legal administrative procedures. There's going to be punishments. There's going to be changes in policy. There's potentially going to be changes in law affecting the UCMJ. All of that is going to happen, but all of that is supporting fires to that real point of main effort, which are those Marines policing each other up, as we've always done.
My guest, Christopher Woodbridge, retired Colonel, United States Marine Corps. Just a comment on that. It's been interesting because all the things you talked about are a part of that. I do, and again, I hate to sound like an old retired guy. Just go away, man. But I do get this sense of that the changes, you know, the change through boot camp and whatnot, how do you sustain that? When you go into a barracks that we don't run like we used to run anymore, and I think it's a substantial problem in the Marine Corps. And the more people I talk to, the more I hear it. And that is, we don't own the barracks anymore. I think an initiative under General Amos was they have more privacy. It's their living space. We don't go out in town and, you know, all the bullshit I heard. And now, you know, a field day isn't a field day. It's kind of a cleanup. There is no company SOP for your room. You do your room however you want to. You know, and so oversight there isn't welcome anymore. You don't belong up here. So our behavior can migrate back to this civilian because that change, you know, now I can kind of a la carte it. It applies over there but not over here. And I think that's a dangerous thing. And especially with our force, which is 60% of the force is under the age of 26 years old, and it turns over. Every 100,000 of the 180 turns over every 3 years. It's astoundingly young. And so to me, there's structure that goes with that. And if you don't tend to that structure, you're going to pay. And I think we're paying for getting away from the discipline. You know, it's interesting, Chris, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Every guy I talk to that comes on this show, you know, as we talk about leadership in combat or whatnot, General Kennedy most recently, it all comes back to one word: discipline. I had Mike Musselman on. Do you know Mike?
I don't know him personally. Okay. I certainly know him.
And I asked him, I said, Mike, when you're doing battlefield circulation with regimental commander, division commanders, whatever, how long would it take you when you got to a unit to see if they were disciplined or not? He said less than 5 minutes. The way they wear the uniform, how clean the place is, you look at weapons, you know, you look at just all, you know, you look at how they eat, you look at how they use the head, all of that. I said, and when you see an undisciplined unit, your thoughts? And he said, it makes me sad. And he said, because I know some of these guys are going to die and they don't have to, but that's the way it is in combat. When you're undisciplined, you pay for it. So I'm curious, am I too much of an old guy, Chris? Is that the lament of the old? So I'm curious about your thoughts about discipline.
I don't think so. So what I'd say is I don't think so.
Okay.
And I think those are certainly with regard to discipline. That's a universal and timeless truism. And it is a sad fact. It is a sad fact that those less than disciplined units and less than disciplined individuals also suffer grave consequences in that environment of combat. With regard to the barracks, and it touches the discipline issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an old guy issue. It's a question of how we make those values that you're describing relevant to our younger Marines, our more junior Marines. And I agree with the structure issue. There needs to be adult leadership present in those living areas, but it goes beyond that. There needs to be adult leadership present in those Marines' lives consistently. And the challenge, again, for transplanting some of those old guy values into the new world, or the new generation, is how to do that without coming across as untrusting, without coming across as out of touch. How to really be part of those Marines' conscious lives and be relevant in their lives is a huge leadership challenge. It always has been.
Right.
Some will naturally do it better than others. The challenge of the service is how to keep the range, all right, so there's kind of a bell curve of leaders, how to keep the center mass of that bell curve aligned with what is best for the service and combat readiness. You know, there's always going to be outliers. On the one end of the bell curve, there's going to be the General Dunfords of the world.
Right.
On the other end of the bell curve, there are going to be some negligent, if not criminal, people in leadership positions. But the bulk of it, that center mass of the shot group, are going to have differing capabilities, differing abilities, and the challenge of the service is to keep, recognize that range, but keep those, the center of that shot group as close to the azimuth that the service needs to be on as possible. And we do that through training, through education. We do that through officer selection. We do that. This is an old word, but I saw it on a publication here around the office that dated back to 1946. Officer indoctrination. And this is, that's an indoctrination. Sounds kind of
ominous.
Sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds kind of ominous. But really, that's what it is. The institution expects things of its members. That includes leaders. We expect leaders to behave in a certain way. That goes from setting the example as an individual to how you interact with those in your charge,
right.
Being that engaged and intrusive leader. In other words, being a relevant part of their lives. Again, relevant and part of their lives. It's easy to become an irrelevant part of their lives, and I think some of the efforts retake the barracks bordered on that.
Right.
We can install all the closed circuit TV you want.
Right.
That is not a relevant presence in a Marine's life.
No, all that is collecting evidence for the investigation. But there's a duty NCO. There's a duty NCO that's supposed to be there and supposed to be out there. But when the duty NCO is either afraid or intimidated because he doesn't want to be the bad guy. Because now that it's a college dormitory, I don't want to be the bad guy, right? Those are my friends up there, you know? I don't want them to hate me, you know? So this whole idea of a dormitory, this isn't a dormitory. It's a barracks. It's a nice barracks, but make no mistake about it. It's not a college dormitory. And I think the Marine Corps has been dancing by the fire. What is the right mix of that for young America to come and embrace us? Well, they have embraced us. They need to be Marine, and they need to come to our they've signed up to come towards our culture. We need to not be afraid to offer the best of what we have to them and not come off that. And I think that this whole barracks thing is misguided. And I think it sends the wrong message that we can behave how we want to up here. And those timeless standards of what happens in the Marine Corps on Thursday night.
I agree with you.
On Thursday night, we don't do a general cleanup and kick the beer cans off the third deck down to the ground and then go back in our rooms. We don't do that. The whole thing gets field day. There's the company gunny's up there, and it's going to be inspected by the company commander on Friday. That's the way it goes. And so, to me, the lack of structure, especially for young America now, that grows up so different, so oriented on themselves, to me, is dangerous. And again, I say that with this caveat. They can do the things that any version of America has done. And we've seen them in combat, Chris. Do those things, right? But if you don't give them the structure, to me, you dance with the devil. And if you're afraid of that, then you don't belong in a decision-making position, because that structure is a good thing. It saves them. And
that's
so,
exactly right.
Yeah, so.
And I couldn't agree with you more. It's not a, it's not a question of the off-duty mentality. You know, I'm a Marine for 8 to 10 hours while I'm on the job, and then off duty on liberty. I take the uniform off, and now I'm not quite that same Marine anymore. It's insidious, and I think I've told you that. I see it very very frequently in organizations in the National Capital Region,
right.
Because the work is largely driven by that. Work day kind of environment. But the other part is, and indoctrination may be a scary word to some, but the fact is you are joining something other and bigger and better than yourself. You will be required to modify yourself to fit into this organization. You may not like that. You may not embrace all of that. But we already know that better than 60% of you are going to fall into that bucket every 3 years.
Right.
You're going to do your enlistment, and then you're going to leave, because it does not really imprint on you. That change does not truly stick. And that's okay, because we've got another 60% coming right behind you.
Yeah. But while you're here,
yes, you are required to do this.
Right. And again, that's we can't apologize for that. And let me take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk a couple more stories in the May issue of the Gazette. The editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette this morning, Chris Woodbridge, during the Marine Corps Gazette Hour here on All Marine Radio. More of that coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. Past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. ...7:53 on a Wednesday. Mike McNamara with the Woodrow and the Marine Corps Gazette Hour. Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired, editor and publisher of the Gazette, continues with us very graciously. Woody, give me a couple more things that you would... and to include one that's in the online version, that you would tell people, take a look at this.
Well, the other... really got the other side to the May edition is publishing the... the winners of the Kaiser Family Irregular Warfare essay contest. That is actually the has been the first running of that contest was during 2016. And so these are the winners out of a field of about 25 essays. These are the four winners, first through third place, and then an honorable mention. You'll find them starting on page 56 with the winner, Major Carl Forsling's essay, Investing in Marines, which really looks at the selection, training, education, development of Marines as the foundation for building partner capacity as part of irregular warfare. That was the number one article, first place as chosen by the Gazette editorial advisory panel, which is a group of about 20 staff NCOs and officers that do the judging of all the Gazette writing contests.
Wow.
The second and third place, Captain Mark Rothrock, had the second place winner titled Preparing for the Future, and First Lieutenant Matt Ormsby had third place, which is called The New Approach. And our honorable mention was actually written by a frequent contributor to the Gazette, Captain Brett Friedman, who I know you've had on the program in the past.
I texted him last night. How about that?
He's a smart guy. Really, really great writer and exceptional officer. He wrote in an article is again was the honorable mention, and it is in the web edition. The title of that article is False Choice, and I really have to give a kind of give a shout out to Brett on this. You know, again, I'll tell you the voting for these essay contests is. Crowdsourced, if you will, to the advisory panel of the Gazette. I'm just one vote in that panel, but I really liked Brett's essay, and here's why. The term and its joint definition, irregular warfare, I think is a really muddled term, and he takes that on by essentially laying out that, you know, it is not an either-or proposition in terms of organizing, training, and equipping the Marine Corps. You don't do either irregular or conventional warfare. They're really two sides of the same coin, and you have to be able to do both. And the choice or the distinction is really pretty artificial when you look at it. So I really enjoyed his piece, and was glad that at least some of the panel agreed, and he got the honorable mention. But again, that's the first time we've run this this particular essay contest. It is all funded by a very generous donor, the William and Mary Grieve Foundation, and John Kaiser is an author of several books on Islam and the struggle of irregular warfare in various periods of history, to include Algeria in the 19th and 21st centuries. Really interesting guy. If you want, I'll see if he'll be available for an interview at some point in the future.
I'd love to.
And he has personally taken on a vested interest in, and this is something that Phil Smith can comment on as well, at maintaining focus and thought on the subject of irregular warfare or small wars, while an awful lot of the Marine Corps kind of shifts fires and focuses on other things. So, you know, if you want to think of it, we have to keep that small wars pilot light burning, and John Kaiser has put some real skin in the game, personally and through his family foundation to, create this essay contest as a tool to do that. So next time we're running that is going to be in 2018. And, again, we'll, keep you informed as far as how that develops.
All right. Chris, tell everybody how they find, first of all, tell everybody about the online edition relative to the print edition and the differences that you'll see there. And then tell everybody how to find you guys.
So, essentially the online edition or the web edition of the Gazette, is a facsimile of the print magazine for that month, with the addition of other articles, and there's not an A team, B team there. I can tell you as the editor, what drives this more than anything else is space available in the magazine, and so we'll shift a number of finished articles over into the web edition every month. This month there's two on the website. And then in addition, on that website, members of the association have access to the entire Gazette archive. They can go back and search authors, articles, months and years, and read back over, close to 100 years worth of Marine Corps Gazette articles. All of that is available on our website. And that's www.mca-marines.org/gazette. And again, there's a fair amount of free content on there that anyone can access. And then it's set up if you do want to become a member, you can make that transaction happen right there on the website and access the entire content easily that way.
All right, Chris Woodbridge. Chris, first of all, thanks for hopping on this morning with short notice. I appreciate it, and I'll shoot you an email, and we'll work on next week. But interesting. I thought your own editorial was very good and spot on. So I always enjoy reading that. But interesting addition, aviation at the forefront of issues in the news, and certainly appreciate you coming on this morning.
I'm glad to participate.
All right, thanks, Chris.
All right, and when Smitty comes back on, please say hello for me.
I will. He didn't say you were a shitbird. I said that. So anyway. All right.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate
you're,
that.
You're welcome. All right. Have a good one, bud. See ya.
Roger. Out here.
There you go. Chris Woodbridge. You know, it's one of the coolest things about the Marine Corps. It's one of the coolest things because it is small, and you find people. I was talking to Phil Smith this morning and saying, hey, we've got to move you to tomorrow because Woodbridge needs to come on at this time. And he said, okay. He said, Woodbridge is one of my guys. I said, really? He said, yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to be joined by Will Cosentini. We are going to talk PME, Professional Military Education. And I'm curious. I think I want to see if Will can footnote the whole barracks as a private dormitory kind of thing, because he was working in the commandant's office, I think, at that time. Actually, in the ACMAX office, I think. I'm not sure. So maybe he can, maybe he can't. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio, Hour 2 coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch the dial.